You know, as I was thinking about this meeting and about telling a little bit about the history of the West End Assembly, there was a hymn that kept going through my mind, and unfortunately it's not in our hymn book, but it is that hymn that says, "Great is thy faithfulness." And as we think of the gatherings of the Lord's people, this assembly and other assemblies, surely we could voice those words with heartfelt thanksgiving. Great is thy faithfulness. Now I'd like to read four verses, but in two locations. The first location is in Deuteronomy. Both chapters are in the Old Testament. Deuteronomy chapter 8. There are two verses that I'd like to read in there. Deuteronomy chapter 8 and verse 2. "And thou shalt remember all the way which the Lord thy God led thee." Now that's all I want to look at in that verse. "Thou shalt remember all the way in which the Lord thy God led thee." Look at verse 18, the same chapter. "And thou shalt remember the Lord thy God." Now there's a difference between those two verses. The first one speaks of their way, their pathway. And the second one speaks of their God. Now I'd like you to turn to the book of Haggai. I have a couple of expressions in the book of Haggai that I'd like to bring to your attention. The first one is in verse 2. Haggai chapter 1 verse 2. "Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, This people say the time is not come, that the Lord's house should be built." The expression I want to pull out of this is the expression, "the Lord's house." Look at chapter 2, verse 18. "Consider now from this day and upward, from the 24th day of the 9th month, even from the day that the foundation of the Lord's temple was laid, consider it." And the words I'd like to focus your attention upon are those words, "the Lord's temple." Now these both have significance in this book of Haggai. For when you look at that expression, "the Lord's house," it is zeroing in on what it means to the children of to God's people. When you're looking at that expression, "the Lord's temple," what it is looking at is what it means to God. And when we think of an assembly, you must think that the assembly has two aspects: what it means to those who belong to the assembly, and what it means to God. Now, when I think of the gatherings of the Lord's people, I think of this fact that fellowship with a people for himself was always in the heart and mind of God. For I think of the fact that at the very beginning, when God created man and woman, he said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness." And it shows us, and it shows me the fact that it was in God's purposes that, in God's mind, that we would be conformed to the Lord, and from that we would show forth then the Lord unto those we came in contact with. And as I read through the Old Testament, you will find individuals who walked in close fellowship and communion with their God. I'm thinking of Abraham, Moses, David, and there were others. They valued, they treasured close fellowship with their God. And they sought to maintain that fellowship. And as I think of that, well, I have a favorite verse in Malachi that I like to look at so many times. And it speaks of that close fellowship, that communion that there can be between we here on this earth and the God who is in heaven looking down. And here, and when I think of what God said about the people in that day, "They shall be mine in that day when I make up my jewels." And See, God is looking. He's looking down upon a people who desired to speak about Him, desired that fellowship with Him, and He says, they're my jewels. They're my treasures. And that desire for fellowship comes out to us again in these two passages that I've read. For as you think of the first passage, you think of that second verse. Thou shalt remember all the way which the Lord thy God led thee. God was telling His people that they were not to forget their experiences, their training that God had brought them into, that they were not to forget how God had dealt with them, how God had led them. But then we could get occupied with all of our experiences, and we could make that the focus of our attention, and we would be lost. We would then be sidetracked and turned aside. And so at the end of that chapter, God, in verse 18 of that Deuteronomy 8, God says, thou shalt remember thy God. Not only are you to remember the pathway you take, but you're to remember the God who directed that pathway. And center your attention upon God and upon Him, that you'll not forget that God, without God, you would have no pathway. Without God, you could not please Him. And then I come to this book of Haggai, and I find in Haggai that there's two great expressions in here. The house of the Lord. And you know, if you were to look at the book of Haggai, there are, in the book of Haggai, there are 38 verses. And the first 24 verses, it focuses on that expression, the Lord's house. Now, as I said, it's speaking about what God's house should mean to the people. What it should mean. And Haggai outlines, and he says that, and God speaking through Haggai says, it should be the gathering center of the Lord's people. That's where they should have their attention centered upon. And then he points out that it's a place of promise. God gave them promise after promise, centered upon the gathering place where they were to gather. And then it's a place of blessing. And God said, I will bless you. And then for the last 14 verses of this book of Haggai, the focus of attention is the Lord's temple. What it means to God. And God says to them, and He tells them, it should be a place of holiness. Holiness should mark my place. It's a place of worship. You come to worship God. It's a place where obedience is noted. You obey what God has to say. Then it's a place of appreciation. You appreciate what God has done for you. And you show your appreciation for Him in your manner of life and in your conversation and what you do. And so I thought of these verses, how true they were, because when I think of the history of this assembly, down through the years, you know, our brother Ian mentioned that this is 75 years for this building. But that's not the only anniversary. This year represents the 125th anniversary of assembly work in Winnipeg. 125 years ago, the first assembly was planted in the city of Winnipeg. It marks as well the 110th year since the first conference was held. And so it's a very remarkable thing. It's a very interesting thing that when we look at the assembly here and we think of these things, how much that would say, great is thy faithfulness. Because for many years, God has been faithful to the people here. And God has blessed them and brought them and brought many, many people into assembly fellowship here. And if you were to go across the country, you could meet people in this assembly and that assembly at all across the country, and one thing they have in common. At one time, they sat in assembly fellowship in Winnipeg. So that's a very remarkable thing. Now, how did the assembly start? Well, there must have been a notice gone out to people who would be interested in assembly fellowship. And so the first assembly fellowship was held not in a building, not in a tent, but it's held down along the banks of the river. And if you were to go down and you were to go across the Louise Bridge, now on the top is the artist's impression. They had great ideas back in the 1800s of what the bridge would look like and what the landscape would be like. Well, this is the what it actually was like when the bridge was completed in 1881. They completed that bridge, and the people gathered. And if you were to go over that Louise Bridge, over on this side, there's a little park called Midwinter Park, and in that park, they gathered for the first couple of Sundays, and there they broke bread in the open air. But it wasn't very long after that they had to move indoors, because you know what the weather is like here in Winnipeg. You can't depend that the next Sunday you're going to have nice weather as well. So they very shortly they moved. But if we look back, the earliest records that we have come across go back to 1897, although the assembly really started 1882. And in that year, they had offerings. They've had offerings over the years. Offerings were very small in those early days. You think of the offering in today's term, the offering for 1897 was $312 for the whole year. The offering for 1899 was $346 for a complete year. Salaries, of course, were much different. They were much smaller. And when I think of the hall, when they first moved into a building, they first moved into rented quarters. And in those rented quarters, they would have to provide their own lighting. And how did they light the hall? Well, they lit the hall with coal oil lanterns. Now, perhaps maybe some of the younger people don't even know what a coal oil lantern is. Although, when I was growing up, my grandparents still used them at their cottage. And last couple of years ago, they finally put electricity into the cottage, and so the coal oil lanterns aren't used anymore. But you know, right from the very beginning of the assembly, one of the focuses of the assembly was always on gospel work. They had that great desire of gospel work. And you know, I have an overhead that shows you some of the gospel meetings. But as I think of the gospel work, I am thankful that the West End, that the assembly here in Winnipeg was exercised about gospel work. Because as a result of that early gospel work in the 1910s, my grandmother was reached and saved. She came out of a family that did not know the gospel. She had just recently been married to my grandfather, and she came in contact with the gospel. And she was saved as a result of that. But she never was received into West End Assembly, because shortly after that, they moved to Lethbridge, Alberta. My father was born there, and then they moved to Brandon. And she was received into fellowship in Brandon. Then they moved to Thunder Bay. And that's where my father met my mother, and then I was born. And at the time my mother left Winnipeg, she was the only one saved in the family. Her husband was not saved. She went to Brandon, and her husband was not saved. And then when they came to went to Thunder Bay, she saw her husband saved, and then all of her children saved, and most of her grandchildren saved. And it began with the gospel work from the Winnipeg Assembly. And so I'm thankful for that. And I'm thankful for the men who came to Manitoba to do pioneer gospel work. In 1870, Donald Monroe left Scotland and he came to North America. And when he came to North America, he began to preach the gospel and do pioneer gospel work. And he encouraged others whom he knew back in Scotland and others back in old country to come. And they came to this country and they began to do gospel work. As a result of that, there were a number that came to Manitoba, Saskatchewan, and Alberta. Men such as Donald Ross, and John Smith, and John Ray. And they moved here. And they began to do pioneer gospel work. Some of these men that joined him were Robert Dixon, Robert Telfer, Mr. Chawner, Oliver Smith. And each of them, they seem to have the Lord directed their paths to move to certain locations. And so to the city of Winnipeg, Robert Dixon and Mr. Chawner, C.W. Chawner, they made their home in Winnipeg. And later on, Alec Wilson made his home in Winnipeg. And since then, our brother Jack Gould has made his home in Winnipeg. And these men have been going out to seek to spread the gospel to areas around, not only in Winnipeg, but around the province. And that gospel effort has resulted in, I believe, many precious souls who will be in the glory. Now, as we think of the gospel meetings, we think of the fact that after we look at this, as far back as the records we could find, and the information we could find, the first gospel meetings would go back to 1919. But I'm convinced that there were gospel meetings that were held in connection with the West, with the assembly in Winnipeg much earlier than that. These are some of the meetings that were held in the halls here in the city. But we do know as fact that in 1922 that the assembly held gospel meetings in St. Andrews. And there the local brethren went. And they held meetings in January. And then in March of the same year, they carried out work in Goner. And the Lord actually gave blessings in both of these locations. And so, as another offshoot of their gospel efforts, they not only did these gospel meetings in here, but the assembly itself, they determined that it would be important if the assembly had a tent. That there were times during the summer months that a tent could be set up. And different brethren could preach the gospel. And so in 1930, the assembly purchased a tent. And that tent would enable the different brethren to reach out to different locations and to preach the gospel. And as they would preach the gospel, different individuals that would not come into a hall could be reached and could be saved. And as we look at this chart up here, you'll find that 1930, they set up a tent in Goner. And as you read down there, you'll see some of the other names. Pine Creek, 1931. Pine Creek again, 1932. Pine Creek again in 1934. And as you look down, you'll see these tent meetings, and they were held. As you look down, you'll find that the tent they purchased in 1930 lasted until the summer of 1957. After that, they were no longer able to use the tent. Which, when you think of that, 27 years for a canvas tent is a long time. Those tents were very heavy. I'm familiar, not with this tent, but with some other tents, because my dad had a tent, and it was tremendously heavy. And one thing I noticed that he would always say, don't touch the sides when it started to rain. Because once it started to rain with a canvas tent, and you touched the side, the water came through. And so you had to be very careful. And so they had tent meetings. And these tent meetings went on for quite some time. But you know, an assembly, this assembly, not only had an interest in gospel work, gospel meetings, tent meetings, but they also recognized that there was a need, a great need to for fellowship and communion and enjoyment with one another. And how did you go about it? Well, they went about it in May of 1897. They held a conference. And they invited people to come to this conference from many regions around. And so not only did the people come from Portage, Brandon, but they also came from North Dakota. And at the time that conference was held, you remember our brother Gaius Goff. His grandparents lived in Walhalla, North Dakota, and they would make the trip up to Winnipeg to the conference. Conferences were held in many locations. All the halls that they had were rented buildings, and so there weren't very many locations. But we do have some pictures of some of the effects of the conference. What went on in a conference? Well, a conference needs people to work in the kitchen. And so we have conference workers for 1931. We have more recent conference workers here. Conferences, meals were held here in the hall after the hall was built, under sometimes very adverse circumstances. For when the hall was first built, it had a great big huge coal stove that sat in the middle of the basement. And so that made it very limited as to where you can put a table around the hall, basement, in which to eat. Well, these conferences were held in many locations throughout the city. And then as you gathered the conferences, Mr. John Hull had this to say about conferences and the ministry in those days. He said that the scriptures were opened up at these gatherings of believers down the years, but still it flows as fresh as ever. And we trust that the benefit of these meetings will be evident and permanent. We believe that the ministry over the years has been instructive and seasonable, with local and visiting brethren taking part. And so the conferences formed a very needful service in allowing people from different assemblies to gather together and to enjoy fellowship with one another. But you know, I spoke of gospel work, and I spoke of tent meetings, and I spoke of conferences. But before I look at the building itself, I'd like to just focus your attention on the fact that we think of the gatherings of the Lord's people, I thought of the fact that God was keenly interested that his people have these times when they would gather together. And when I think of the gathering together of the people, I think of the fact that God encouraged his people to keep 7 feasts of remembrance. And these feasts of remembrance were very, very important. They lumped these feasts of remembrance together in 3 categories. And the first feast was the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Now, the Feast of Unleavened Bread was emphasizing that God's people were to be a holy people. And then that Feast of Unleavened Bread was linked with the Passover, which would remind them of their salvation, the day of their salvation. And it would be a reminder, a remembrance of the fact that a redeemed people were to be a holy people. And then that feast of unleavened bread was linked with the Feast of First Fruits. And as you think of the Feast of First Fruits, you think of the fact that they were to remember that their strength was in God. That's the first thing they should remember. Their strength was in God. And then they were to remember the fact that there would be others yet gathered unto them. That there were others yet coming. That they must pass on this information. And then the second feast that I think of is the Feast of Weeks, or the Feast of Pentecost, which was to remind them that God would provide for all their needs. And I believe that the Apostle Paul picks up that theme in the Philippian epistle when he says, "My God shall supply all your need according to his riches and glory by Christ Jesus." And so I think that Paul is focusing in on the purpose of the Feast of Weeks or Pentecost. And then thirdly, the children of Israel were to remember that as a people for God, they were to remember the Feast of Tabernacles. Now that Feast of Tabernacles was a remembrance of all the ways which the Lord their God had led them. They were to remember every path, all the experiences that God had brought them through. And that Feast of Tabernacles was linked with the Feast of Trumpets, which would remind them that they were to look to God for their directions, that God was to be their guide in life. And then that Feast of Tabernacles was linked with the Feast of Atonement. And this was a reminder that they were to be a people of holiness. And as a people of holiness, there were those things that could come into their life that would separate them from communion with their God. And it had to be made right. And so when I think of that first group of feasts, which are grouped around the Feast of Unleavened Bread, I think of the fact that it would suggest to me that God's people were a people to have a love for the Word of God. And when I think of the Feast of Pentecost, I think of the fact that it suggests to me that God's people were to be a people with a love for God Himself. And then when I think of the Feast of Tabernacles and the Feast of Trumpets, which talks about gathering together, I think the fact that God's people were to be a people with a love for one another. And those features are very, very important in an assembly. And I think that down through the years that the assembly here in Winnipeg has tried to keep that as a focus and keep that in their mind, that they must love the Word of God, they must love God, and they must love the people of God. And so, to every gathering, there must be a place where they can focus their attention. And so the assembly has really moved in a number of locations. It hasn't really stayed in one location. And when you think of the fact, well, this is this assembly building here was built in 1932. But the assembly started back in 1882. Where did the assemblies meet? Well, we've got a few places. We know at the foot of the Louise Bridge, but that was only a couple of weeks. Then we know that they moved out to Main Street and they rented a room on the second floor of a store on Main Street. From there, they moved to a building on Logan Street, a building on to Hutchins Hall, and as you walk down, you come to 1870, and finally they moved into a store, the Bon Accord building. Now, as we understand, this Bon Accord building had been built to be a department store. But as soon as the owner of it found that the department store was going to sell cigarettes and liquor, he canceled their lease. And he would not let them go in it. But they rented the second floor, room 106, in the Bon Accord building. And if you were to go to... I think I have a picture of that. And if you were to go to down Main Street and were come to Logan and Main, you would see not this tall building, but you would see the bottom floor only. For they have torn down the first four floors, kept the bottom floor, and you would find it's Mitchell's Fabrics. If you were to go down along the black side here, you've got this doorway, and it still has over the top Bon Accord block. The assembly was there for many, many years. And then after the Winnipeg Assembly divided by mutual consent in 1914, the North End Assembly continued to meet in the Bon Accord building. But when we look at the assembly, and I mentioned that conference time, this people would come from other assemblies. Well, there were other assemblies throughout Manitoba. In fact, a man in J.W. Jordan in London, England, in 1907, he published a book. And I happened to be able to get a copy of that book. And it lists for us the assemblies that were functioning in Manitoba at that time. And you can see there's Winnipeg down on 235 King Street. As you look down through them, you'll find all of these. Some of these assemblies are no longer there. There are some assemblies where they just have the person's name, and at that time the assembly was held within their home. Well, now let's see if we can look at the two assemblies. The West End, as I mentioned, 1914, the Winnipeg Assembly divided in two parts. The assembly had become so great in size that there really was not room in the room they had rented in the Bon Accord building. So they divided. And even when they divided, the West End Assembly was still the smaller of the two. The North End Assembly was fairly large. That continued for quite some time, but eventually, as is always a problem in the assemblies in Winnipeg, is that many people move in, are here for a little while, they move out. And by 1933, the North End Assembly had become so small that the people that were in the North End Assembly left there and moved and became part of the West End Assembly. By 1933, of course, the West End Assembly owned their own building. But when they first parted, West End Assembly rented quarters. And this used to be the Elam Chapel. Before that was the St. Matthew's United Church. When we look at the building and you think of the building at that time, they say that it was tremendously hard to heat, hard to keep a fire going, because the furnace that was sat in the one corner of the main hall, and the furnace required 4-foot logs. Well, it's not everybody can pick up a 4-foot log and throw it into the fire. And 4-foot logs sometimes could burn very, very rapidly. Well, they continued in that until 1932. 1932, they began to build this building. And when the building was completed and they were ready to open the doors, they held the hall. They had held a meeting. And a notice appeared in Words and Season. There's a notice from Words and Season that appeared to announce the opening of the West End building. It moved down. Unfortunately, we don't have any photographs, good photographs, of the hall on that day. The best we can find is one that came out of a magazine, and I can't even find the magazine anymore that I got that was able to scan this out of. But over the years, the assembly has had renovations go on through the to the hall, and I won't go into all the renovations because of our time constraints. But one of the features of the assembly has been the West End News. Mr. John Hull began West End News about 1943, and he carried that little newsletter on until just before his death in 1977. The West End News was then started it up again by our brother Duncan Dunsire, and he continued that for just over 10 years. And then after that time, was taken up by Helen Wilson and Debbie Lord, and they have been keeping the news going since that time. Children's meetings. Children's meetings and children's work have always been an active part for the West End Assembly. They've had children's meetings all the time. Interestingly, and I don't know the Sunday school superintendent today whether they would be how favorable they would be to this, but they used to have their children's meeting, their Sunday school picnic, at the parks near Selkirk. Now, how did they travel there? Well, not by bus, not by car. They took a paddle wheel steamer up the Red River. Now, that would be very frightening with many children, because I can imagine you'd have to make sure that everyone had a life jacket on, because surely somebody's going to end up in the water. Well, that's a fair amount of distance and a fair amount of time to go up the river by paddle wheel steamer. They've had the picnics in other locations, and then over the years, the sisters have met for mission to parcels for missionary work. These parcels were, if you think about it today, these days they meet on a nice Wednesday in the morning. But when they first began those missionary packing, they would meet either on a Monday or a Wednesday evening. And of course, that could be during the winter, that could make things fairly dark around the hall. And so it was felt better to change that. Now, I'm going to skip right over to the next thing, weddings. You know, the hall was built in 1932, but the first time they had a wedding inside the hall itself was with Mary Schepansky and Brown McMonagle. And that was in 1949. Before that, weddings were held in homes, most of the time in homes. And we have here a list of, we hope it's all the list, but from time to time we find out that we've missed somebody, and if you see anybody that's missing, you can let us know. But these are the ones that chose to be married inside the hall itself. Now, our time is pretty well up, and I'll just leave that for a minute, but perhaps we could close with the singing of a hymn. And I'd like to